That is awesome, and it's a good way to start this edition of Colt Chinero Chat, which we will shift continents, we will shift gears, and talk about this morning's Atletico game, Rob.
Yeah, another really good match.
Indeed. Atletico defeating Alaves by 3-0, and arguably, I've argued this week that it's their biggest league game of the season to date, and they won it comfortably in the end, Rob. What'd you think of the performance?
Yeah, no, I agree, though. I think this was a crucial game. I think without a good result in this match, things would have gotten a little hairy.
Especially considering a couple of the later results, Valencia and Sevilla, they drew at Mestalla. And then Barcelona just, well, they beat the brakes off Espanyol 4-0 at Cornea. So the gap atop the table, it's looking a little more like we're used to seeing, but Atletico are still hanging around. They're 3 points back, currently in third, level on points with Sevilla.
Yeah, it just makes that Barcelona result a couple weeks ago a little bit more annoying.
Yeah, a little bit, especially considering how close we were to seeing Diego Simeone get his first league win over Barca. But that's the past. This is the present.
Yes.
And and Atletico, honestly, I didn't think it was an amazing performance. I thought they were good. Keep in mind, I was also watching this at 5 in the morning, and I was very tired. But I didn't think it was an amazing performance. The first 30 minutes, I thought Atletico were very good. They got the opener through Kalinic, who we're going to talk about a bunch. The next, I'd say, 30 minutes or so, they were kind of average. Alaves kind of worked their way into the game. They had a couple good chances. Borja Bastón, especially, got into great positions, our old friend Borja Bastón. And then the last 20-25 minutes, I thought Atletico were great, and they were relentless at the end, getting that second goal, getting that extra cushion through Rodri.
Yeah, especially in the last 10 minutes, they were very, very good. I think we saw some really good signs from them being able to really kill off a match in a way that they haven't done so far this season.
Yeah. Griezmann in the 82nd minute, Rodri in the 87th. Rodri we talk about all the time, but his pass completion percentage, we usually do this on the show, only 83% today, Rob.
Yeah, I mentioned it in my player ratings. It was kind of unusually low, but I think if you look at what he did elsewhere on the pitch, he certainly made up for it. Other than the goal, he was pretty dominant in the midfield, I thought.
And even with the goal, it just makes his numbers and his stats look even better from this game. 5 aerials won, led the team. 8 clearances as well. 8 clearances from a central midfielder.
Love it. Absolutely love it.
Love it. God. Yeah, and he's... We mentioned this just about every time, just how important he has become and what he can do. I'll give you an example just from this game. When Lemar came off just after the hour and Javi Montero came on, Saul shifted into midfield, and that gave Atletico a more attacking look because Rodri was still going to be there to clean up in defense. In past years, Saul would have been shifted back into a water carrier role. It would have been extremely defensive, and Atletico probably would have given up a goal at the end. And I would have finished 1-1 instead of 3-0.
Yeah. I mean, what he provides in terms of being able to both be solid defensively and then as well as propel the team forward is so crucial. Because, yeah. In so many matches we've seen Atleti just not be able to produce anything in the final third after being so rigid the whole match.
So he got his goal from a really nice passage of play with Correa forcing a really good save out of Pacheco. And then Rodri's just there to clean up the rebound. Right before that, 5 minutes earlier, Antoine Griezmann, his 4th league goal of the season. First one he's scored in a while. Actually, what was the last league goal he scored?
Leganés.
That's right, that free kick.
At the beginning of November.
Yes, and that is a month between league goals for Grizzy. But he finally got one here. Vitolo really made this goal, though. Another example of Simeone using his bench. Vitolo comes on. He comes on for Kalinic just before the hour. He makes a great run. I can't remember who blocked the initial shot, but Vitolo makes a really kind of mazy run up to the halfway line, springs Griezmann free. Griezmann beats LaGuardia for pace, and then just Pacheco comes out of the net. First shot goes off the post. Second one, he taps in. He goes to celebrate with the fans. And what do you think of the new celebration, by the way?
the meditation.
The meditation. I like it. I like it a lot. It's got potential.
I do too. I do. I like it also. As a celebration, I think it's fairly unique. So I'm good with it. Griezmann has good celebrations. We know this.
Yes. At the very least, they're inventive. Maybe not always good, but they're at least inventive.
Yes. Fair enough. Yeah. Very fair.
But no.
None of the goals were particularly beauties day, but they were all very crucial, I think.
Yeah, the Kalinic goal especially was not pretty, but they all count just the same. So the pretty part about this goal was the build-up. Lemar picks out Arias with just this amazing cross-field ball. Arias takes a few steps, unleashes another great cross just like he did on Wednesday in the Copa. And Kalinic, well, he doesn't really control it. He controls it to the point where it kind of glances off his chest and in. But hey, it's a goal. It's a goal.
It is. It wasn't off his arms, so it counts.
Yeah. It went off his chest. Like, oh, okay, I'll take it. Kalinic with his second goal of the week, his first goal in La Liga Santander. And, you know, we got to talk about Nico.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about Nikola Kalinic, because when he signed, a lot of fans didn't really get it. A lot of fans were like, this guy was a flop at Milan, scored, what, 6 goals in 40 games, got kicked off his national team at the World Cup. He's really patiently waited for an opportunity like this, and he's taken it. At least on Saturday, he took it.
Yeah, I agree, and I think you and I fairly resoundingly defended the signing, just because Atleti are pretty light in terms of strikers, and we sort of know how ineffective Griezmann and Correa can be as a strike partnership. So I think we were both excited to have a different kind of striker in the team. And it has taken a while for him to get adjusted, but I think this week has been a really good one for him.
Oh, no doubt. And you're right, he is the profile of forward who fits well next to Griezmann. Griezmann and Correa can be electric together, but they're also way too similar, and they kind of make the same runs. We talked about this last year. We talked about it when Vieto was in the team and Simeone tried that pairing, which, the less said about that, the better.
Yeah, big ugh.
But with Kalinic here, he's that big body. And I think you wrote about this in your player ratings. He's that big body, and he's the guy where you give him 2 chances, he's going to finish 1.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's very good playing with his back to goal, I think. And I think we even saw it in the World Cup. I mean, Olivier Giroud scored no goals, but he was crucial to setting up Antoine Griezmann and the rest of that France team. And I think if you have a player that can do that role, which hopefully Kalinic will be able to do more often, it can be extremely helpful to your team.
Yeah, I mean, listen, Kalinic is pretty limited. He doesn't run very well. He doesn't pass very well, but he wins the ball in the air, and he plays well with his back to goal, and he'll finish chances if you give him to him, especially if you cross the ball into him. And when you have a good crossing fullbacks like Santiago Arias or Felipe Luis when he's fit, which he's not right now, when you have good crossing fullbacks, it makes it a bit easier to go that route.
Yeah, and clearly I think we've seen that's the kind of surface he thrives on, so hopefully he'll get a little bit more of that in the coming weeks. And I think Arias playing more game time is only going to help that.
Oh, shout out Santiago Arias. He's a beast.
He was great today.
Yeah, we've seen enough of him at this point to kind of figure out what he's about. I'm not always impressed with what he does defensively, but that man, he can cross the ball. Let me tell you. Oof.
Yeah, I mean, other than Rodri, obviously, I think he's the summer signing we know the most about at this point. I think Kalinic and Gelson have both kind of been in and out of the team, but Arias in the last few weeks has really gotten some minutes and looked all right, I think.
93% pass accuracy for a fullback.
Yeah, that was great.
That's something else. And as you
especially when you look at what Saul's number.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, especially when it's about 40% higher than Saul's.
Yeah, you can see which one of those is the natural fullback.
Yes, I will give Saulito credit though. This is not at all his natural position, but he's trying.
Yeah,
he's trying.
God knows we need someone there. So he's doing a job. Bless him.
And with Lucas getting hurt, we're probably going to see Saul at left back again a couple times. Lucas hurt his knee in the first half. It's a grade 2 sprain, which means no ligament damage. But I would be surprised if we see him again before the new year. With the Christmas break coming up in just a couple weeks, definitely not going to see him in the Champions League midweek. But Yeah, that's a big blow to a defense that just can't get healthy. I mean, Jimenez comes back in this game and Lucas goes.
Yeah, it was really, that was a hurt. That was painful because we've been struggling with this defense. I mean, you can tell by just Saul playing as a left back and how many games Savage has played in the last few weeks. It's not great.
No, it's not. And Godin is training normally, so hopefully he's back in midweek. That would definitely help matters, but this defense has just been racked by injury, you know, for the last 6 to 8 weeks. Luckily, Simeone could call on Montero in this game, and I think he did a pretty good job.
Yeah, I think Montero's done well in the last few appearances. Clearly, he's one of the academy players that Simeone trusts the most, which I think is interesting.
Yeah, him and Borja Garces and probably Tony Moya, and that's really about it. And Borja keeps getting in the squad, but he's going to end the season with one game and one goal scored, isn't he?
Yeah, probably.
He really is.
He's going to have a really good conversion rate, at least.
Yeah, it's true. And really, really high per 90 stats.
Yeah, big time. His per 90 is going to be looking excellent. I think Montero getting game time is only good, though. Because we didn't really see him as much as we saw Borja in preseason. Yeah. So it's kind of surprising to me that he's getting as much game time as he is. But he's looked good.
Just 19 years old. His pass accuracy was, shall we say, quite low. 29%.
Yeah.
And he did get booked. But, yeah, he's got pace to burn. We talked about this when he came out against Dortmund. When he played against Dortmund in the Champions League. He's got pace to burn. He sticks to the game plan. He'll screw up every now and then, which is expected out of a 19-year-old playing in one of the best defensive teams on the continent. But he tries his best to stick to the game plan. He doesn't try to do too much. And, yeah, he was effective in this game. And I saw a lot of people on Twitter saying this was a defensive sub. Cholo's going for the 1-0. But you know, it allowed Saul to push up. And Montero came in, played left back, basically. And that gave Atleti actually a more attacking look.
Yeah, I do wonder if he may actually get a chance to play at left back, especially probably. Just before the Christmas break. But we'll see on that one.
My guess is probably, considering the injuries probably right not. Now. Yeah.
Yeah, he'll probably be solo at left back again, though. I mean, I think Montero would probably do a better job, really. Saul does well there, but I'd rather have him in midfield doing what he does best.
No, yeah, no question. Just, yeah, at left back, it's not a natural fit, but he's trying his best. That was the case against Girona when he could have scored in that game, and it was the case on Saturday against Alaves. Speaking of Alaves, their expected goals a bit higher than I thought, 1.3 per understat. I mean, Borja Bastón alone had about just over one expected goal, looking at the numbers right now. Borja had 1.03 expected goals by himself.
Yeah, and about half of those came from one chance, five minutes from the end.
Yeah.
Which was amazing that he missed, honestly.
Yeah, 0.64 from that one chance in the 85th minute alone. When Atleti were already up 2-0, they pretty much put the game away. And then 2 minutes later, Rodri would make it 3. Yeah, Atleti 2.47 expected goals to 1.3 for Alaves. And that seemed about right. Atleti's, of their four biggest chances, they scored 3 of them. That'll do.
Yeah, and they're creating really good chances now. And I think this is kind of the recipe for success, is Atleti's never going to create a ton of chances. They're not going to be a Guardiola team. But if they could get a few really good chances, then they can be successful.
This has been a theme of the show in the past. When will we see Atleti 2.0? When will we see this team attack, 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 and kind of meld offense and defense? When will we see this team become, this true juggernaut? And the answer is, we're not going to see it under Simeone, and that's okay. Look where Atletico are in the league. Look where they are in the Champions League. Look where they are in the Copa del Rey. They're doing just fine. I mean, yes, they have too many draws in the league, but they are capable of scoring plenty of goals, even when they do play this negative kind of style that a lot of people who don't watch them claim that they play it. And yes, Atletico can get overly negative at times. I think we know that. But Atletico had 48% possession in this game. They were outshot 13-12, but they had more shots on target. They had the better chances.
Yeah, and it's something that I think kind of swings back and forth on the kind of consciousness of soccer people, is that, like, is it better to play like Pep Guardiola, or is it better to play like Prime Mourinho, which is more successful? And the reality is you can be successful with both. It's just right. You have to be good at it one way or the other.
And Simeone is really good at managing this type of a team.
Yes.
We have seen it time and time again. He is quite good at managing this kind of style and these kinds of players.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah, and he's had a lot of success playing this way, so I think that's why we've been hesitant to really slam Atleti in some of their poorer draws, especially this season. But, you know, it's been getting better these last few weeks, which is a good sign, despite a depleted team.
Hey, a 7-goal week, I'll take that. Normally we see 3-goal weeks, this is a 7-goal week.
Yeah, pretty spectacular.
I'll take it. I will take that.
Yes.
So we talked about Kalinic. We talked about really all the new signings. They all played a part in that opening goal. And I like to think that's a good sign, because we haven't seen these guys really all that integrated into the team this year. And we see Vitolo get more minutes as well. He got, you know, a good 35 minutes in today. What do you think this starting 11 is going to look like after the winter break?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I mean, I think we've seen that Correa is really a preference of Simeone to have in the team, especially in recent weeks, so I would assume he might be in there. I just wonder about the Tomas spot, because we've seen a lot of talk about how Tomas has been sort of asking for more game time, and he's been getting it, but I sort of expect when Koke comes back into the team and when Saul can no longer have to play at left back that Tomas will get displaced.
That's the most difficult one for me, is what do you do with Tomas Partey? And
yep.
I still don't believe Tomas and Rodri is the best central midfield pairing. For me, it's Koke and Rodri. That is, to me, the best central midfield pairing that Atletico can play. And you saw Atletico struggle for a large portion of this game without Koke. Can't really recover the ball as well without him there, and you can't really control the ball as well without him there. And Atleti won 3-0 anyway, which made this even more impressive to me. But with Tomas, what do you really do with him when Koke and Saul are both A, healthy, and B, playing in their natural positions? I still don't think that he and Rodri are a great pairing together. I think in some ways they're too similar. Especially defensively, they're very, very similar. They move the ball a little bit differently with a little bit different speed, but they're too similar for me still.
Yeah, I think so. I think Tomas gives you a little bit more... Well, they're both kind of like this. They give you a little bit of drive in the midfield to push through and break through lines, but definitely, and Tomas is particularly good at that.
Yes, he
is. But, yeah, I'm kind of thinking we're getting to a point where Tomas is going to be sold either in January or in the coming summer. I kind of just getting that feeling based on what we've heard these last couple weeks.
Yeah. You mentioned Correa as well. That's the other kind of unclear one. Can you see maybe Vitolo displacing him at some point?
I think so. I think that could actually happen this season. I think especially his last few games, Vitolo's been quite good. And Correa has these moments, but I think really he's most effective as a sub.
Yeah, I agree. He wasn't particularly good on Saturday. He got booked. Had a chance to score a late goal, but would have been just, you know, not a consolation, but it would have been some polish on an otherwise kind of unpolished day, if that makes sense. Yeah, he's better as a sub, and I would argue that he's been arguably... I just said argue twice. I would make the case that he has been this team's most influential attacker when taking the entire season into effect, because Griezmann's form has been kind of up and down. Costa has been bad, and now he's hurt. Kalinic hasn't really seen much time. Tomas Lemar hasn't really made a giant impact overall. I'd say Correa has been the most consistent out of those players, out of that quintet.
Yeah, and I think a lot of his good performances have come off the bench. So I wonder, I mean, it's always a thin line whether a player performs well as a sub, do you keep using him in that way, or do you use him in the first team? And I think we're kind of seeing Diego Simeone figure that out a little bit.
He does love Correa, though.
And, he really, really loves Correa.
And I understand why, but... And to be fair, he has been more consistent this season, but there's always room for improvement.
I think so. But I could definitely see Vitolo displacing him in the new year, I think.
Yeah, a lot of interesting... I like how we're not even talking about Jelson anymore, either, because, like, what's the point?
Oof, I mean... It's not looking good on that front.
No, it's not. I was thinking about this earlier this week. Do you think there's a chance Jelson leaves in January?
Yes.
Yeah.
I do.
Yeah, I do. Honestly, I do too. He's not trusted. It's clear that he's not trusted.
Yeah, and just with all the weird stuff with Sporting and that's sort of never been really resolved about the fee, I wonder if there may be some kind of Carrasco-y behind the scenes stuff going on there.
Speaking of Carrasco, you saw the story this week.
I figured we'd get to this.
Yes. So, Rob, explain for our audience the football leaks coming through with the goods on Yannick Carrasco.
Yeah, not something we really expected to see, and you can read the full story to kind of get all the nitty gritty details. And we kind of knew from earlier football leaks that there was a clause in Carrasco's contract that gave Monaco a lot of money, and it ended up, basically the story is, Atleti took a big loan, couldn't end up repaying it, and the company who gave them the loan basically told them to sell Carrasco in January to pay them back, and that's what ended up happening. So, yeah, I mean, it was a shady deal at the time, I think. We kind of knew that, given sort of the ownership of the two clubs, but it's getting a little weird.
And this is, you know, according to FIFA bylaws, this is illegal, what Atletico are alleged to have done in this case. Then again, yeah, Everyone else has been breaking the law. Why can't Atletico, right?
Yes, but as we often see, the big teams tend to get away with these things, and those who break the rules get punished, like Malaga in financial fair play.
Still kind of breaks my heart what happened to that team.
It really does, even though they have the Scottish Spaniard banging in goals in the...
Shout out Jack Harper. But yeah, as far as Carrasco goes, this was a Canadian company that Atletico took out a loan on, and unsurprisingly, perhaps, Atletico could not pay back this loan. So Carrasco was effectively used as collateral, and it's difficult because more and more now we're seeing footballers used and treated like possessions, used and treated as collateral. As not really human. And I know that it's a little extreme, but it's not, though. By the same token, it's not extreme. That this is what's happening to a lot of these players. And we knew at the time that something real shady was going on when Carrasco, after the transfer window had closed, in the middle of February, gets up and leaves for China. And he puts on a brave face and says, "I'm here because of the project." And we kind of believed him, but then... we kind of didn't, and now we may have some more light shed on why.
Yeah, and I think, I agree with you about the sort of players being used as pieces of meat thing. It's kind of gross, and I think one of the main things UEFA tried to do in the last 10 years or so is get rid of the third-party ownership thing, sort of hoping that would fix this problem, but clearly it hasn't.
No,
there are ways to circumvent the system always.
Just find ways around it. And it does make me feel a little worse for Yannick. When Carrasco left, there weren't a lot of flattering things said about him. This kind of puts it in a different light.
Yeah, and a lot of players that go to China are sort of labeled as money grubbers and stuff. And, you know, whatever. Get your bread. I don't really care about that.
Yeah,
but... The Carrasco thing, it rubs me the wrong way.
Yeah, it seems like in this case, he may not have had quite the choice that we were led to believe he initially did. So,
but we've seen this before with Atleti and the Falcao situation. He didn't have much of a choice going to Monaco in the first place.
He had absolutely no choice in going to Monaco.
Yeah. they handed them the bag, and Atleti had no choice.
No, and considering where Atletico were financially at that time, you know, only 5 years ago, but a long 5 years ago, they're in a much different place financially now, and they still find themselves in a situation where they have to sell, you know, a player of obvious quality, inconsistency, but also quality, like Carrasco. It's a difficult situation, and Carrasco's brother came out in the press the other day and said, look, he could return to Atletico someday. I'm not taking it off the table, which that would be interesting, would it not?
It would be. I find it difficult to imagine that Carrasco's improved a great deal being in China, but it's hard to... I always found it difficult to hate Yannick Carrasco, even when he did a lot of stupid stuff playing for Atletico, because, I don't know, he just seemed like a nice guy, and he was clearly so talented.
And
it never really worked out for him, except for that Champions League final.
Yeah, I was just going to say, he scored a goal in a Champions League final. That that instantly gives you cred with Atletico fans, and it should. But
yeah,
his tenure was just always full of strife and turbulence, and the way he left was, too. And that sucks. Frankly, that sucks, because he probably deserved better.
He was an annoying player, for sure, at Atletico, because it's like, you are so good, but you just cannot produce consistently, and I'm sure there's plenty of podcasts that you and I did where you could find that sentiment echoed from the last few years.
Yeah, there are several, definitely.
I think they might be.
just a little bit of regret now.
May not have been as kind as we remember ourselves being.
Ugh. So there's going to be more out of Football Leaks. I just think that Der Spiegel and Football Leaks are doing great work. They've talked about securing the bag.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, you know, as much as we love the sport and we write about and we talk about Atletico, you know, all week, you know, every week, big clubs need to be held accountable too. They need to, you know, there needs to be a check on power. And how much power these clubs are getting. I mean, there's a brand new UEFA competition coming in 3 years, less than 3 years, and that competition is going to be a monster, and it's the big clubs just at it again. So credit to Der Spiegel and Football Leaks. I know there are a lot of football watchers, fans, supporters, whatever you want to call them, who are upset at these leaks that don't want this stuff getting out, just like the clubs and those authority figures don't. But I think it's good. I think it's good for the game.
If you dislike these leaks, you're probably just doing it out of support of your club, really, more than anything. And primarily this is kind of the Man City type club, PSG type clubs that have a ton of money and like to be secretive about it. And Atleti aren't really that kind of club, but as we know, they do a lot of bad stuff behind the scenes, just as much as the big clubs do.
Especially.
Which is worrisome.
Especially the PSG contingent on social media, they have been very upset at Football Leaks divulging this information. Moving on from some of that uplifting material, let's talk about the Champions League. Match day 6, group stage action, Atletico taking on Club Bruges in Belgium, a chance to win Group A. Rob, you're our Belgium expert. Can they do it?
Yeah, I think they will do it. I mean, it's kind of a weird spot to be in because Atleti are qualified for the next round, but they could still win the group. And they can't just get a draw because Dortmund have the better goal difference, which I believe is the first tiebreaker in Champions League. I can never remember what the tiebreakers are, but irregardless.
I know that's not a word. I was going to correct you.
Atleti should win.
Is it better to win the group or not to win the group?
That's actually a good question. And to be honest, I haven't looked at the other Champions League groups to see who's in first and second.
luckily for you, Rob, I've got them right here.
Oh, yes. Please enlighten me.
Yes. Group B, Barca, they've already clinched it. But Spurs can join them. Spurs can join them in the last 16. They're level on points with Inter. Group C is a mess. Napoli are currently atop it, but PSG are on 8 points. Liverpool are on 6. Bayern and Ajax are fighting atop Group E. Ajax can win that group if they beat Bayern. And then City are 3 points ahead of Lyon, but they're going to win the group because they have a superior goal difference. Nobody cares about Group D. Group G.
We want whoever comes out of Group D.
Yeah, Group G, I guess Roma can... No, I don't think Roma can win it either. Real Madrid have a better goal difference than them. And then Man United can still top Group H if they win on their last they win their last game against Valencia, who don't care anymore.
Yeah, they're out.
And if Juve used lose to Young Boys, which they won't, so Juve are going to win that group. So yeah.
Yeah, I mean, looking through it now, I mean, it's not a huge advantage to get the second place team, but I think it would still be a considerable advantage. I think if you could draw a team like Ajax or, you know, potentially someone else.
Yeah, I mean, I would rather draw someone like Ajax or Lyon or Schalke than I would say PSG.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly. Or Roma even.
Or Roma, yeah. Because we as we saw last year.
Yeah, we know what happens there.
Mm. So, yeah, I don't know. What matters to me is if you're in the last 16. Atletico already are. And there are cases where you can get a better matchup placed second than first. But the group winners do look pretty strong this year. I mean, other than Group D, which, again, nobody cares about. You do have a pretty strong set of teams there. I mean, Juventus, Real Madrid, Man City are all likely to win their groups. Bayern, you think, are probably going to win their group.
And one of PSG
yeah.
or Liverpool win that group.
Yeah, or Napoli. All three of those teams can still win it, I think.
Yeah, they can. I would just expect PSG or Liverpool to end up on top.
Probably.
I can't see Napoli staying there for too long.
So, honestly, I think based on this current crop of group winners, I'd say Atletico would be better served finishing first. Because I would rather avoid those teams, and if I were in Atleti's shoes, I would want to play Spurs or Inter. I would be more interested in playing Ajax or, as I mentioned, Ajax or Lyon, or even Manchester United. I would be more interested in playing those teams than I would, you know, say, Bayern or, you know, Man City or, you know, Juventus. Any of those teams.
Yeah, none of them. Let's not have any of them.
Let's not do that right now.
I think Atleti would match up well with Tottenham and Manchester United, just because they kind of Tottenham not so much, but Manchester United and Atleti tried to play similar styles. But I think Atleti have a better idea of what their style is and have better players.
I would be terrified of that tie. Not because I think Atleti would lose, but it would be pitifully boring.
Oh, it would be awful.
It would be
terrible to watch.
There would be some truly awful football if Atleti and Man United played in the last 16. Oh, my goodness.
It would be the most shithousy tie in the history of the Champions League.
Yeah, that would be terrible. I don't even want to think about how bad it would be. Oh.
Let's just draw Porto or something. Or no, we can't. Or Schalke or something. Schalke. And smack them up. How about that? Or actually, I would like to finish second so we could get Porto and Iker Casillas and just smash them for like 12 or something.
You want to see Oli Torres cry, Rob? Is that what you want?
I was more thinking about Casillas. Yeah, I don't think I could handle Oli Torres crying.
Our poor one-time golden boy, Oli Torres.
Yes, with his sweet little face. It still looks like he's 12.
Anyway, Club Brugge, who we have not talked about,
it's almost like we don't care.
They have just one win across their last five in all competition. They lost to, Waslen Beveren. They lost by a score of 2-1 on Friday night. They are, again, just one win from their last five between the Belgian League and the Champions League, so they're not in outstanding form. They don't have much to play for. They've already clinched their place in the Europa League. With that in mind, and even though Atletico aren't in the healthiest shape defensively, I would back Atletico to do enough in this game and win the group. I'm going to go with a 2-1 Atletico win.
Yep, I would agree with that. I'll go for a 1-0-er, just because I don't think Bruce is that good. Especially in the games we've seen against them. I don't think they've been particularly inspiring, but I'm glad it looked like a tough group when it was first drawn, but I'm glad it's ended up being better than last year.
Yeah, that win over Dortmund kind of put things back into order, and Atleti just did what they had to do. Monaco being awful did make matters a little bit easier. That was unexpected. But Atleti taking care of business against Dortmund and then doing what they had to do against Monaco, that has put them in this position where if Monaco take any points off Dortmund, then Atleti can win the group. Atleti will win the group.
There are going to be some strong teams dropping into the Europa League this year.
Yeah.
I'm glad Atleti aren't one of them this time.
Yes, unlike last year. But that didn't end too badly for Atleti, despite dropping.
No, it certainly didn't.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to watch the Europa League.
Yeah, especially not, you know, Turner Television. Broadcasting the final.
For us this year.
Only game they're broadcasting is the final. If that doesn't tell you what they think of the Europa League.
Great advertisement for the competition. Really looking forward to it.
On that note, Rob, I think it's time we sign off.
Okie doke.
Rob Walker. You can follow him on Twitter at rwalk03. Thank you so much for joining me.
Yes, no problem. There will be a lot of Atlanta-related spam these next couple days.
Yes, and congratulations once more on your Atlanta United doing the damn thing.
They certainly did do the damn thing.
You can follow me on Twitter at jbbaron. You can follow Into the Calderon at Into the Calderon. Like ITC on Facebook at facebook.com/IntoTheCalderon. Next week, Rob and I will be dropping a fresh international news desk. We'll be going around the world, the international affairs desk, rather. We will be going around the world and finding out what ex-Atletico players are up to. That's dropping next week on patreon.com/ColtGennaroChat. Head on over there to become a ColtGennaroChat amigo. We'll be back with that and another fresh pod next week. Until then, adios.